Hello, this is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And today's guest is Irina Smith. And I'm going to go right to you in a half a second and let you tell us the name of your book, which we're going to talk about today. And I'm happy to say that I met you through a just good luck accident. Somebody at a party in some conversation suggested I read your book. And I did. And I have to say, I've said it to you, your writing is so good. It's just unusually good. Okay. Irina Smith, you take over and tell us the name of your book. And why don't you just say what your goal is in writing this book?
Okay. I will try to keep it brief and pithy. The book is called The Golden Ticket, A Life in College Admissions Essays. And my goal was a little bit contrary to the title is
I was wondering about that. I'm glad you're going to say
that. The title is ironic, is to convey to readers that there is really no golden ticket, that things that glitter are often not gold, or they might be, but they're dangerous. And really just to be careful about one size fits all thinking about success in particular.
Okay. So, excuse me, I'm glad you said that because when I got the book because a friend whose taste I trust said, read it. And the title led me someplace I was not expecting to go, but on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
But let's do one thing at a time, because you used the college essay assignment questions to fit what you wanted to say about life.
Yes.
Right? And it was not as much about, well, it was about both things. Let's talk about college admission and college essays and what is required today to get into a good university. And do you really need a good university? I say that in quotes, you know, the ones that are, yes, marked.
Yes. The ones that are marketed as the top 20 that you have to go to in order
I didn't even know what I saw four. I saw Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and Stanford.
Right.
And parents who, if they couldn't get into the, okay, you talk about it. Talk about what is required to get in to a good university or any university. Just you talk about that for a while, because I think parents and students are under so much pressure today that it's just.
Right. Well, in addition to the pressure, the parents who are sending their children to college now are parents who applied to college in the 80s and 90s, in the halcyon days before the U.S. News and World Report and consequently, colleges' marketing departments had gotten their claws into the American psyche. So just to give a little bit of history, the U.S. News and World Report college rankings came out in 1983, which was an unfortunate product of the 80s, together with perms and highlights or frosted hair tips. But we can talk about 80s fashion another time. So, the U.S. News and World Report did a very ingenious thing in order to sell more copies of the magazine, which is to give people a hierarchical sense of thinking these are the good schools, because, of course, when there is a hierarchy, you always want what's at the top. You don't want whatever's at the bottom. If you look at the actual system, it's fairly arbitrary, but colleges that were originally floating around the top, or sometimes not even nearly at the very top, have very cleverly used marketing, outreach, enrollment management strategies to drive up applications, which obviously, if they don't increase the number of spots for those applications, is going to drive down acceptances. And the more the acceptances go down, the higher the college goes on the U.S. News and World Report, because selectivity, exactly, is one of the marks of excellence.
If it's hard. Spiral upwards to benefit the advertising. But so I have a question about that. When you talk about, I think it seems to me underlying this is advertising's brilliance at making people feel inadequate.
Exactly.
And yeah. That's so pathetic. They do it with, I mean, here's this lady now who sells deodorant for your whole body, because no matter what you do or what you smell, you're unattractive, you're
sure.
Not good, you're not good enough intellectually, you're going to get nowhere in life.
Absolutely.
Talk about that need for
validation.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, for the right word. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that the evil genius of advertising is creating an itch for something you don't even know you want. And it's not like people didn't know that Harvard, Princeton, Yale, et cetera, were good schools in the 1970s. Everybody knew that. But the U.S. News and World Report, and in response to colleges' marketing departments, made it such that these schools were so rare and special that they would basically fix your entire life and guarantee you a happy and perfect future. And Stanford, which was a very good regional school in the 60s and 70s, sort of used that to vault itself into the Harvard, Yale, Princeton, now Stanford ranks. And so it's not necessarily a referendum on the goodness of the school. It's a referendum on how much the school is coveted and the projection that if you don't go to the school, there's sort of this binary Yale or jail, your life will be.
Okay, so let's talk about what students give up emotionally and financially because student loans that they will never be able to pay back. Right. I can't see how. Talk about that.
So
loans are made for it.
Right. To your earlier question about what is required to get into the schools with the single digit admit rate, or as I like to call them, highly rejective colleges, you obviously need excellent grades. You need a very rigorous college curriculum, which for most students means about 8 to 12 or more advanced placement classes, which I should know are university level classes taught at the high school level, plus extracurriculars that typically hit at least the state level, maybe the national level, often they do, exceptional letters of recommendation testifying to the student's genius, brilliance, once in a generation exceptionality, and heartfelt, beautifully written essays. And the vast majority of the students who deliver all those to the table are still not going to get in. So right. To your point about the cost is giving up a regular childhood and adolescence of just screwing around and making mistakes, developing socially, having an unregimented life that is not scheduled from dawn to dusk with activities. And the students I worked with in my college counseling practice were not necessarily worried about student loans. Their parents would pay full freight, but they were paying in a different way. They were paying with depression, anxiety, eating disorders, and so were their parents. Their parents were anxious and stressed and unhappy. And I just want to say this one other thing, because I know I've been talking for a while, but the one other thing that kills me is there are all these studies that show that Harvard graduates make, $40,000 a year more in whatever profession, Yale graduates, et cetera. There's a large earnings bump from going to those schools, which is true because those schools have a very wealthy, very connected alumni network.
Okay, but that's a different thing. You're connected to people who will lead you to that.
Maybe who will lead you to that, right? Assuming you thrive at those schools, and given how many young people are coming home from those schools before graduating because of mental health problems is growing and growing and growing. But apart from that, the thing that kills me is that we're not talking about $40,000 more. And if you go to Harvard, you're going to live in a mansion. And if you go to, God forbid, Cal State East Bay, you're going to live in a hovel. If you graduate from Cal State East Bay with no student loans and great grades and a sense of confidence in who you are as a person and professors who think that you're amazing and walk on water, you maybe won't live in a mansion, but you're not going to live in a hovel. You're not going to live under a bridge. So we're talking about, you're going to join maybe the 0.01% versus you're going to join the 0.1%, but we're not talking about a zero sum game. You're going to have a crappy life if you go to a bad school, and you're going to have a great life if you go to a good school.
Okay, well, I have a couple of kind of questions about that. As one of my daughters pointed out when she was in high school and going through, the truth is you can learn anywhere.
Absolutely.
And it occurs to me, and always has, that if you need a particular body of knowledge, to practice, you need law, medicine, or accounting, and you've got to know specific things about that. Then going to a good school, you know, that's great because you're going to learn a lot about those things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe connected with firms and offices that will hire you more readily. But not only does it occur to me that you don't need those schools, my question now is, I mean, I say no, does everybody need a college degree? And it's kind of across the board accepted that if you don't have a college degree, you are lucky if you get a job in a steno pool. I don't even know if they have those anymore.
Right.
Everybody doesn't need a college degree, except for the humiliation of having to say that you were not, that you're not a college graduate.
Right.
You
know, I think need is a very tricky word in that I think whenever you say you need something, it's a good idea to ask why. And if the answer is external, to impress other people, to satisfy your parents who are going to be bugging you for the rest of your life if you don't finish, that's worth interrogating further. College is not for everyone, or I should amend that by saying college is not for everyone immediately out of high school. I think that's the thinking that students are inculcated with, particularly if they go to high schools with a high placement rate to a four-year college. That's sort of normalized. This is what you do. But the fact is, not everybody is ready either cognitively or emotionally or socially for college right out of high school. And I wish schools helped students think that through more. So it doesn't have to be you're never going to college. It might be taking a gap year. It might be if you're very unsure and you struggled through high school, going to a community college, which costs very little in comparison to a $40,000 or $80,000 mistake that you come home in infamy because you couldn't hack it. You know, you try out community college, it doesn't work, you're out a couple of $100.
Well, let me ask you something else. I don't, you may be too young to remember this. I hate to pull rank like that, but there was a study done a gajillion years ago that I remember very vividly. And it turned out in this study that success in life was in inverse proportion to success at university. And I understood that because when you're in college, you're good at satisfying other people's assignments,
mm-hmm.
which is very different from satisfying your own abilities. What do you...
I absolutely agree with that. I think that some of the smartest, most interesting people I know either really struggled in college. My best friend did not graduate from college, and she is one of the brightest, most curious, most interesting people who, by the way, also retired from a six-figure career at Google that she worked her way up to by being smart and intuitive and curious and observant, all of which are qualities that she did not learn in college. She learned over the course of her very challenging childhood and adolescence and young adulthood.
Whether she was genetically lucky and was born with those innate qualities.
Exactly. And so you could go to the best university or college in the world and you may not graduate with a skill set that you need to have meaningful relationships, to feel that you are fulfilled in your life, to feel a sense of purpose. I mean, there have been article after article published about how Ivy League graduates are disproportionately being heavily recruited and then going into financial consulting work like McKinsey to, you know, gain real world skills. And they make a tremendous amount of money after college, which I suppose in some way justifies, well, all the suffering and struggle to get to Harvard, Yale, et cetera. But now you're a consultant at McKinsey and, you know, at 22 years old, you're making, I don't know how much money, but a lot. But you're also working 80-hour weeks. It's uh-huh. also extremely stressful. And the people, there's actually a really, really great essay about this by a Yale student, and I want to say a little bit more about her later, but Marina Keegan, and the essay is called Even Artichokes Have Doubts, and I very highly recommend it to anybody who is listening. And she talks about And this was back in 2008, I think, in the maybe 2012. It was in the olden days. But she talked about, she was a Yale student, how so many of her peers entered Yale wanting to create something, wanting to change the world, wanting to be a playwright or an artist or a social justice advocate. And then something shifted, partly because of the recruitment efforts, partly because of panic, like, oh, you're not going to make very much money if you go into those fields. And suddenly everybody is going to McKinsey or peer companies. And her question was, why? Why are we all doing that? And sure, I understand, working for a nonprofit doesn't make as much money, and it's hard to meet your friends for drinks who are working at McKinsey, and they're throwing around $100 bills and you're living on a budget. But the fact is, can you put a value on a life that is truly meaningful to you on your own terms? Because if you get used to making money, it's very hard to step out of that and being like, okay, I'm going to be a poor artist now.
But now, so I knew a young woman. You may know her. We can talk about this later. And a Soviet emigre. And she, once you apply for these schools, it's kind of a given that you've got good grades and that you satisfy the basics. Kind of a
Absolutely.
given. They don't, I'm guessing, I would say, I mean, I wouldn't want to read them, that you don't need to write an essay about your good grades and all that you've accomplished academically, because everybody's got that. She wrote a beautiful article for some contest, and the essay was growing up and learning to cook from her grandmother. Time in the kitchen with her grandmother and recipes from Russian life. And she got a $100,000 scholarship, prize money, ages ago. People want to know that people are human. Talk about that. Talk about what you really should include. And shouldn't you have a good time writing that essay?
Yes, you should. And the problem is, in our achievement-driven culture, at least here in the Bay Area, or I would even dare to go as far as saying in our toxic achievement-driven culture here in the Bay Area, there is so much focus on deliverables, on the grades and the test scores and the extracurricular activities and the awards and honors and on all the gets, that there's not really time in these students' lives. Like, my guess is that the vast majority of today's seniors don't have time to putter around in the kitchen with their grandmother, because what is
Something
that?
that they've done, there's something that they feel, there's something that they've seen that makes their view of the world unique. No?
Right. Well, that's, you
Oh,
would think that.
is that where
You
you
would.
come in to help them find that?
Exactly. And of course, all of them are convinced that they have nothing interesting to say, that there is nothing new under the sun. And in part, they're not wrong, because they have spent their entire adolescence chasing grades and test scores and extracurricular activities and recognition. And if there's no time to putter around in a kitchen with your Russian-speaking grandmother who is teaching you how to make knishes or borscht or whatever else, it's harder to get a sense of there's a whole life apart from that. And I think one of the things that students are also not exposed to, that I wish they were exposed to more, are stories of people who did not necessarily go straight to a good college right after high school, but who actually wandered and faltered and bumbled and made mistakes and then figured themselves out.
Yes. And how do you make a human contact with, I have a woman I was friends with for years. She did not graduate high school for reasons of personal devastation in her family. And at some point she decided she wanted to go to law school, and she applied to law school. I'm sorry, she finished high school, no college. She wanted to go to law school, applied to a good law school, made sure that she somehow got an appointment with the dean, or she appealed to some, she got in.
Good for her.
Got in and did well. So I would you say that being brave enough not to follow everybody's path is worth something?
I think it's worth a lot. I think that underlying that bravery and the breaking away from the herd is the very real truth that humans are herd animals. We find safety in numbers. And it's really scary and really dangerous potentially to say, I don't want to be part of this. I want to do something that feels right to me. And one of the things I've been thinking a lot about is, of course, that fear of standing out or doing your own thing, and sort of the judgment and the stigma and, oh, you're not going to college.
But people want to stand out as being so wonderful.
Exactly. Right. And also, what if the herd is infected? What if everybody has mad cow disease?
A lot of that in history. Yes.
Right.
Right. So when you advise, I mean, one of the things you said a lot that has really touched me and stayed. One of the things is that you help people find their best what? When
I
people
think
come to you for consulting, what do you...
Yeah. Okay, so as a disclaimer, I'm no longer doing one-on-one consulting with students, but
what
in
did,
the before
what
times,
did.
Yeah, when I did, my goal was really to find what you just said, that there's a human there, because everybody has the grades, everybody has the activities, everybody has the extracurriculars, and everybody's worried about being just like everybody else. And the fact is that all of us are different in very unique and very wonderful ways. And
right.
So what I try to help students really delve into is, who are they apart from all those things? Where do they fit in their family? Because yes, most people have two parents and grandparents, but everybody's relationship with their parents and grandparents is vastly different. Gajillions of people may play soccer, but only that student plays that position in that particular way. And that's what I try to get
they
at.
say that no two siblings have the same parent.
100%.
Right.
Yeah.
So yes, looking for that difference. So I have a question now, because this is kind of what I always ask. And I want to just get into something else, because there's another aspect of your life that I would love you to share with people. And I want to invite you to come back to do that, is raising your own children. And you talk a lot about this in your book, Children with Special Needs. And it has occurred to me, as a parent and a grandparent, just a, you know, person out there, everybody is a special needs child. Everybody.
Yep.
And how you figure out what yours are. But in the, you know, that I'm basically connected to writing love letters, writing good letters, which is no different than what you did in your book. How to write a love letter right now. Are you a letter writer?
You know, I used to be. My husband and I had an epistolary romance, and we wrote letters to each other for 4 years while he was at Cornell and I was at UCLA, back before email, and not really anymore, which makes me really sad, because letters are awesome.
And you still have all of his? And
of course we do. We have a giant box in the garage that is high up in case there's a flood.
Good. So I had the same thing when I was first married. And the mailman, who was such an important part of our lives then, and this was in the, you know, 1960, so that's a long time ago. But I would see him, he would, from the curb, he would either smile at me to let me know that I had one or I didn't, you know, the whole communication. So if you were to write a love letter to someone right now, and the field is broad, which is pretty much anything positive about the other guy, who would you write a love letter to?
I think I would write a love letter to my parents, actually, because they embody all of the themes that we just talked about, including breaking away from the herd and leaving the Soviet Union when I was 9 years old, which especially
was
because
that scary for you at the time?
I was 9 years old, so I just thought we were having a great big adventure, and I was mostly worried that they would go and leave me because they were packing and not telling me where we were going, because I was a very chatty child, and this was in 1977, and they didn't really want me chatting with the neighborhood kids or the neighborhood babushkas about our plans to emigrate.
Right.
But my guess is that it was probably the scariest thing that they had ever done. They were both in their early 30s when they did it, with a
What did
nine-year-old.
they do professionally?
My dad was educated as an engineer, but couldn't work as an engineer because of anti-Semitism. And my mom really wanted to go into the humanities, but couldn't because she was Jewish. So she was a chemistry teacher. And then they came here and both worked as engineers for many years.
What would you say to them, if I may ask?
I would say that breaking away from the herd and ultimately inspiring me with their decision to also make some decisions that I think felt unsafe and risky and ultimately right is probably the biggest gift that they've given me. That and books. I grew up in a house full of books and I loved reading from as soon as I could read and still do.
So I think, and by the way, you're not obligated to tell me anything. Once you do write this, you're going to write it, right? I hope
the
you
letter, absolutely.
So my experience is that, and I, you know, think this is so obvious, but one of the things that parents want to know, and you are a parent, you want to know that you did something right. And to have that written down forever is so valuable.
Yes.
And usually the response is, you know, when you talk about the bravest thing they ever, the response is so often from parents who get letters to the children who write them, I never knew you knew that.
Yeah. I think they do. We've talked about it a lot. A lot of it is in the first book. Honestly, the second book I'm working on now is a long love letter to both of them and actually to the extended family, to both their mothers, my grandmothers. So, I mean, I think it's been out there, but I also think that it's different when it's a letter addressed to you personally and not in a book.
And you see that envelope in your pile of garbage that is the mail today. I shouldn't say
Yep.
that, but, you know, junk mail. And it just stands out and screams, here I am. Okay. I want to thank you for doing this with me.
Thank you so much for having me. This was lovely.
Well, I enjoyed it a lot. And I'm just so touched by all that you do and all that you've accomplished. And I hope that parents out there and students who are under this kind of pressure will get something kind of a, you know, some kind of salve for this, to know that it's okay if they go to, you know, the University of North Dakota. And by the way, with 8 billion people on the planet, there is not room for everywhere and one in the four universities. And I find this with people who are teaching also, that professors who used to want to be at certain schools are going to Potsdam and they're going to Idaho and they're and wonderful, wonderful things are coming out of those because smart lives everywhere.
Yep. That's a lovely note to end on. Smart lives everywhere. You're absolutely right. And so does kindness. And so does imagination.
Yes. And for the kindness and imagination, for all of it, you've got to take a moment and look for it. Okay. Thank you. I'll talk to you
Absolutely.
Later. Will you come back and talk about raising children?
100%. I would love that.
And learning that we have to let them be who they are.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. I will talk
All right.
to you another time. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Janet. This was lovely.
Yes.